Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded change makers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In episode 3, we explored who you are right here, right now, at the start of your journey to become a you or you. This segued into talk about your secure base as a child, namely your childhood home, and wrapped up introducing your secure base as an adult, being self-love. In this, episode 4, we're starting our exploration into self-love, beginning with one of its cornerstones, effective personal boundaries. Brené Brown, shame and vulnerability guru, says, "Daring to set boundaries is about having the courage to love ourselves, even when we risk disappointing others." Healthy personal boundaries are necessary so that self-love has a protected place in which it can grow and flourish. Think of vegetables in a garden protected by a fence to keep out deer and rabbits. Borrowing from Wikipedia, personal boundaries are guidelines, rules or limits that you create to identify reasonable, safe, and permissible ways for other people to behave towards you and how you will respond when someone passes those limits. Personal boundaries are also like property lines around a parcel of real estate you own. Well-marked property lines indicate where your property ends and your neighbor's properties start. As property owner, you're responsible for maintaining your property, as are your neighbors their own. If your neighbors walk onto your property without your permission, they're trespassing. If you plant a garden that extends onto your neighbor's property, you're encroaching. As with real estate, well-defined personal boundaries make it clear to everyone as to what limits you have put in place to foster and safeguard your mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. It takes self-awareness, self-confidence, self-esteem, and self-worth to build and maintain healthy personal boundaries. And herein lies the chicken and egg dilemma. The traits I mentioned, self-awareness, etc., are components of self-love. Your personal boundaries are necessary to enable your self-love to take root and thrive without being trampled or chewed on by trespassers. So if you require boundaries to nurture self-love, but you require self-love to build and maintain boundaries, what gives? As we'll get into in the next episode, often to get started setting boundaries, it takes an ability to fake self-love until it becomes the real thing. And faking or acting as if you have the confidence, the esteem, the awareness, etc., takes courage. Courage doesn't mean you're not afraid. Courage means you act in spite of your fear. It can be scary and stressful setting healthy boundaries, especially if your boundaries have been non-existent or weakly defined or too rigid for a long time. People you interact with could be very uncomfortable with the changes you're making to your boundaries. They knew how to act with the old you and don't want that to change. Doctors Cloud and Townsend, co-authors of a book titled Boundaries, said, "The first thing you need to learn is that the person who is angry at you for setting boundaries is the one with the problem." It's very important to note here that if you're threatened or potentially hurt by setting and/or enforcing boundaries, it's important to seek professional support in this regard. Do not try it on your own. Boundary setting has been and continues to be a challenge for me. One of the flaws that makes me flossom is people-pleasing. I'm a recovering people-pleaser, still experiencing relapses. People-pleasers have very flimsy boundaries. They consistently put other people's needs and wants ahead of their own. They're kind and nice and selfless because they desperately want other people to like them. Here's an example of me demonstrating flimsy people-pleaser boundaries from a number of years ago when my then young adult daughter was in a mental health crisis and experiencing psychotic episodes. My research at the time indicated that marijuana use can exacerbate psychosis. This is how the boundary-setting thing played out. I said to my daughter, "I'd appreciate it if you didn't smoke pot in my house." This was long before marijuana was legalized in Canada, by the way. What a weak boundary. A healthy boundary would have been me adamantly saying, you can't smoke pot in my house. If you smoke pot here once again, you'll have to find somewhere else to live. My daughter smoked pot in my house. She had no trouble crossing my faint hint of a boundary. I ignored the smoking. I didn't want her to get angry with me. This demonstrated to my daughter there was no consequence to her violating my flimsily set boundary. I asked her nicely again and again. After all, I'm her mom. If I wasn't nice to her under her troubling circumstances, who could be nice to her? And she might stop liking me if I asked her to move out. The reality was, by enabling her to continue smoking pot in my house, I contributed to prolonging her illness and my unwanted living conditions. In my role as my daughter's primary caregiver during her mental health crisis, when I hit my mental and emotional rock bottom, I finally came to vividly appreciate how establishing healthy boundaries was vital to both my daughter's and my well-being. Eventually, with practice, my healthier boundaries helped support her recovery and contributed to us forming a stronger-than-ever relationship. Have you thought about the possibility of having boundaries of varying healthfulness across different aspects of your life? For example, you may have perfectly healthy boundaries in the workplace while having overly rigid boundaries at home and perhaps weak or no boundaries in connection with your friends. At this point, I'm going to introduce another meaning of what I call the BU journey, which is boundary relevant. If you'd see the name BU journey in writing, you'd see that I use the letters B and U instead of the words BU. When I chose this name for the process of self-betterment, self-development, self-actualization, whatever term is most meaningful to you, I also had in mind a word I serendipitously happened upon in the Urban Dictionary that also is descriptive of the process of becoming you. It's a word I can't say on community radio, so I'll ask you to complete it in your mind. The word, as I can say it, is un-f-withable. Un-f-withable. Not in the sense of a mean junkyard dog being un-f-withable, but in the sense of the Urban Dictionary definition. It's an adjective meaning when you are truly at peace and in touch with yourself, and nothing anyone says or does bothers you, and no negativity or drama can touch you. That, dear listeners, is the ultimate reflection of having robust boundaries. You are truly at peace and in touch with yourself, and nothing anyone says or does bothers you, and no negativity or drama can touch you. Hence, the BU journey also means becoming un-f-withable journey. Now, one small caveat here. I've said it a few times already in previous episodes that you can never reach the end of the BU journey. Self-work is ongoing and never ending, taking you ever closer to the version of yourself that you were born to be, but never to perfection. Similarly, you'll never become perfectly un-f-withable, but moving in that direction with increasingly healthy boundaries has rich rewards all along the way. So, how to reap those rewards? To answer that, I'm leaning on a comprehensive, scientifically reviewed article called How to Set Healthy Boundaries and Build Positive Relationships. Should you wish to delve more deeply into the why and how of boundaries, you can access the article at, and I'll say it twice, positivepsychologyprogram.com/great-self-care-setting-healthy-boundaries/how. Again, positivepsychologyprogram.com/great-self-care-setting-healthy-boundaries/how. Back a bit, I'd said you can have boundaries of varying healthfulness across the different aspects of your life. There are also different types of boundaries in all the aspects. The article, which is how I'll refer to the just now mentioned article, identifies 7 types of boundaries, which I believe are very helpful to be aware of. Just as you can have good boundaries at work, but poor boundaries at home, you might also have healthy mental boundaries, but not so good material boundaries. Here are the 7 types. Your mental boundary gives you the freedom and space to have your own thoughts, values, and opinions. So you can say something like, I respect your perspective, although I do not agree. This has been a tough one for me. Once upon a time, as a simplified hypothetical example, if I was chatting with 3 people and each of them had a differing opinion on what the nicest color is, I'd turn myself inside out trying to find a way to agree with all 3 of them. At the opposite extreme, one would say, you're all wrong. My favorite color is obviously the best, and I won't hear any arguments. Your emotional boundary gives you the opportunity to be healthfully available to others. This means you're enabled to say, as much as I want to support you right now, I do not have the emotional capacity. My challenge with this has been to remember I have to keep myself in a healthy emotional place first and foremost before others, i.e. put my own oxygen mask on when I'm on the airplane first before I assist others. I can never emotionally support someone else if I'm drained. On the other hand, a person with too rigid of an emotional boundary would be characteristically emotionally unavailable, unable to empathize or sympathize. Your material boundary gives you the power to make monetary and other material-related decisions, such as giving or lending to others in a way that doesn't hurt yourself. You can say, I already lent you money last week, so not again right now. Historically, this type of boundary was also quite weak for me. I'd often acquiesce to my partner around money spending to avoid confrontation, despite knowing our shared budget could not handle the expenditures. A too rigid boundary would eliminate any type of giving, lending, or sharing that could help build relationship. Your internal boundary pertains to self-regulation and energy expended on the self versus others. It empowers you to say, oh, I've been social all week. I need the weekend to myself. It used to be almost impossible for me to do that in my younger years. Instead, I'd say something like, sure, that sounds great. Let's do it. Hang up the phone and hate myself for sacrificing my precious introverted me time in order to give the appearance of being a fun-loving social creature. If I'd had an impossibly unyielding boundary at the other extreme, everything would have been about me always, regardless of the other person's needs and wants. Your physical boundary is to allow you to appropriately say no or yes as regards your privacy, personal space, and your body. You can comfortably and without apology say, I prefer not to hug people I don't know. In my case, over the years, a healthier physical boundary would have enabled me to decline physical intimacy when it didn't feel right for me, instead of me complying and resenting my partner and myself. Had my boundary been too consistently rigid instead of too porous, it would beg self-awareness around my aversion to intimacy. Your time boundary keeps your time commitments in check, setting healthy limits to how much time you spend with someone or doing something. I can only stay for 30 minutes, you're able to say. Yay, here's one type of boundary I don't recall having a particular challenge with. But a weak boundary in this case could result with you continuously being pulled into someone else's orbit at the expense of you not meeting your own demands. An unhealthfully strong boundary would make you the person who never has time for anyone else. In all aspects of life and with all types of boundaries, the ideal is to develop what I call the Goldilocks boundary. Not too soft, not too hard, just right. The Goldilocks boundary facilitates holistic wellness, healthy relationships, your autonomy, the development of your unique identity, the avoidance of burnout, and appropriate influence over others' behaviors. I've talked about what personal boundaries are and shared some of my own challenges with them. The tough part is, in my experience, replacing wobbly boundaries with healthy boundaries. And this, of course, also applies with appropriately softening overly rigid boundaries. The article says there are 3 easy, I would delete the word easy, steps to setting healthy boundaries. I'd replace the word easy with tough but non-negotiable. The steps are, number one, be as clear and straightforward as possible without raising your voice to share what's important to you. I need my home to be comfortable and healthy for me and others. I feel disrespected and devalued when someone's behavior compromises my health and well-being. Step two, state your specific need or request directly, assertively, and clearly in terms of what you'd like, rather than what you don't want or like, and what the consequences are if the request is not honored. It has to be stated in the positive so that the other person knows exactly what you need and expect. You wouldn't send a person grocery shopping for you with a list stating what you don't need. Rather, the list states exactly what you do need. Same here. I need you to go off my property if you are going to smoke. If you smoke once more on my property, you will have to immediately move out. Step three, accept any discomfort you feel that arises as a result of steps one and two, whether it's guilt, shame, or remorse. This third step is a challenge for people, I'm pointing to myself, tending to have weak boundaries, codependency issues, or are people pleasers. The article goes on to say that sometimes adults have been raised by childhood carers who've taught them that expressing their needs is bad and selfish. However, not accepting the discomfort that comes from setting healthy boundaries in adulthood means settling for unhealthy relationships that can cause resentment, manipulation, and abuse. For me personally, my childhood situation was more one of modeled timidity and avoidance of confrontation. You may recall from a previous episode that I said anger was never expressed in my childhood home. My imitation of these models resulted in a sizable challenge for me as an adult to overcome people-pleasing behaviors and set Goldilocks boundaries. In this article I've been referencing, if you're so inclined, you'll find links to worksheets to help you determine your boundaries and then be comfortable in asserting them. The article also points to a selection of other helpful resources. A talk about personal boundaries would not be complete without also considering how to respect another person's boundaries. Your own personal boundary setting is part of self-love and self-care so that you can develop a happy, healthy relationship with yourself and others. One of the major benefits of a wholesome self-relationship is the ability to form robust, rewarding relationships with the other. Relationships with others means, as I hinted at earlier in this episode, not encroaching onto other people's space. Psych Central at psychcentral.com offers up 9 tips for respecting other people's boundaries as follows. Number one, get curious about the other person's needs and boundaries. In other words, don't be afraid to ask them what they need or whether something is okay to do around them. Sometimes a simple question like, is it okay if I do this, will help you better get to know their boundaries. Number two, watch for nonverbal clues that someone is uncomfortable. Sometimes the other person might be struggling to stand up for their boundary, but if they're uncomfortable, there might be other ways for you to tell that you're pushing a boundary. Learn to pay attention to other people's body language, silence, facial expression, hand gestures, and movement. Number three, be empathetic. You may not understand someone else's emotions or reactions to certain events, but chances are you've felt similar emotions for different reasons. So try to remember what it feels like, even if the circumstances are different, to be more kind and empathetic to what the other person is experiencing right now. Number four, be receptive. In other words, if someone tells you no or states their boundary, try not to push back or diminish their line. Number five, learn about other people's experiences. This can help you be more mindful of how different people have different experiences than you do on a day-to-day basis. For example, if you're a cis man, learning about women's experiences and social issues will help you understand what your female coworkers might need in order to feel respected in the workplace, explains Kara Nasur, licensed professional counselor. If you're white, learning about microaggressions faced by Black people can help you avoid repeating those behaviors. Number six, acknowledge and reflect on the boundary someone has said. This minimizes the chances of a misunderstanding and assumptions that can lead to a boundary violation, explains Stacy Sherrell, a licensed marriage and family therapist from California. To do this, acknowledge what the person asked for when stating their boundary, then reflect or restate it back to them before you take any action. Number 7, apologize when you violate someone's boundaries. In other words, if you inadvertently violate someone's boundaries, apologize quickly and say you'll do better next time. When the error is acknowledged and responsibility is taken, safety and trust are often restored quickly. Number 8, forgive yourself for making mistakes too. You're not a mind reader, and even the most observant people accidentally violate boundaries sometimes, says Nasur. It won't help you get better if you're constantly beating yourself up for being bad at boundaries, though. And lastly, number 9, it's okay to ask for help. If you're finding that people are accusing you of violating their boundaries a lot, consider seeing a therapist. They can help work with you to better understand people's boundaries and why you're struggling to identify or respect them. We've looked at boundaries, our own and others, and you'll recall that I'd said boundary setting is an act of self-care and self-love. Self-care without self-love is only a band-aid solution. A self-care act of a hot bath or a walk in nature will provide relief, but only temporarily if the person bathing or walking is experiencing the chronic debilitations of limiting self-beliefs, self-doubt, lack of self-esteem, unworthiness, or shame and blame. Self-love is your mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical autoimmune system. With self-love, you can ward off the bugs that prevent you from experiencing peace of mind, wholeness, fulfillment, and happiness. We increase our immunity to dis-ease spread by others in pain, which we encounter in the forms of anger, humiliation, shaming, corrosive criticism, belittling, insensitivity, animosity, judgment, unkindness, and more. Self-love makes you un-F-withable. But does the term self-love still make you a little squeamish, like you should be apologetic somehow for saying it? Over the episodes, I've touched on a few of the components of self-love: self-awareness, self-confidence, self-worth, self-esteem. I refer to these components or elements as the selfies of self-love. If you were to tease apart self-love, what you'd see would be the selfies. But before considering the selfies, let's first describe what is actually meant by self-love. Love itself is defined as an intense feeling of deep affection. Hence, it follows that self-love is an intense feeling of deep affection for the self or one's own essential being. Self-love is also defined as regard for one's own well-being and happiness, chiefly considered as a desirable rather than narcissistic characteristic. Psychology Today says, self-love means finding peace within ourselves, resting comfortably within the depths of our being. We might find temporary respite by doing something to nurture ourselves, but a deeper inner peace requires cultivating a certain way of being with ourselves, a warm and nurturing attitude towards what we experience inside. It's having empathy and unconditional positive regard for whatever we are experiencing inside. But some people nonetheless find the concept of self-love to be icky. It evokes negative connotations. If you're self-loving, it's a moral flaw akin to vanity, egoism, selfishness, narcissism, self-centeredness. Some think it's ungodly. It's interpreted almost as a romantic or erotic love of self, as if you're infatuated or in love with yourself. Self-love in the context of personal growth, the BU journey, is not being in love with yourself in the sense of self-infatuation. Think of it this way. You could say you love your mother, but you likely wouldn't say you're in love with your mother. Substitute the word mother with yourself, i.e. you love yourself, but you're not in love with yourself. That's the distinction. Why is self-love so important? Because your relationship with yourself sets the tone for every other relationship you have. And the nature of your relationships in every aspect of your life determines your happiness and the quality of your life. You can't give away what you don't have. You can't truly love and be loved by another if you don't first have a loving relationship with yourself. With healthy self-love, you bring the best version of yourself into all your relationships and all your endeavors. The name of this show is Better Me, Better World. Your endeavors to make the world a better place necessitate better self-love. Without self-love, there are feelings of emptiness and inadequacy that hold you back, keep you small and hidden, make it very difficult to find meaning and fulfill your purpose in life. And no one else's love can fill you completely or substitute for self-love. So these selfies, what are they? They're the empowering characteristics of self-love, the traits you want to embody to achieve a robust, well-rounded love of self. Some of them are self-awareness, self-compassion, self-respect, self-esteem, self-development, self-forgiveness, self-confidence, self-discipline, self-direction, self-mastery, self-composure, self-consideration, self-congratulation. With one exception, I'd be hard-pressed to prioritize the selfies. What's more important? What needs to come first? Self-compassion or self-esteem? Self-forgiveness or self-respect? They don't need to be prioritized. They'll self-prioritize when you create space for them to grow. The one exception I make is self-awareness. To get started on growing your self-love, at least some awareness of the current state of your selfies is necessary. Remember our talk in a previous episode about needing to know what you don't know in order to bring about change? Something you might not know about and which is closely tied to this topic of self-love is your shadow self. The shadow self refers to parts of yourself, be it personality, traits, emotions, thoughts, that are difficult for you to accept. It's the parts of your personality that don't conform to your ideals, that you like to suppress, often so well hidden you're not even aware of them. But achieving true, sustainable self-love requires embracing your shadow self. That acceptance can lead to a greater understanding of and ability to love your whole self. And when you talk about it, shine light on your shadow, you are becoming conscious of the unconscious and empowering yourself to make the changes in yourself, your life, and the world that you want to see. To paraphrase Carl Jung, to confront a person with their own shadow is to show them their own light. I invite you to tune in for a continuing talk about exposing your shadow self to the light in episode 5, Better Me, Better World. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.